welcome to a brand new episode of Look Forward. I'm your host, Jay. I'm here with my co-host, Brad.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I know. That was weird. I'd like to start that over. That was really strange. What the fuck? Like, what is my name? You're an idiot. You know what? I'm leaving it in. Let's go.
Fuck it.
Yeah. We've been off for 1 week, and I forgot my own name. Congratulations. Yeah,
that'll happen. You know, it happens to the best of us.
that's very sad. All right. Sorry we were off last week. Things are a little crazy on my end. But we are back. So we're trying not to recap too much from last week. We'll go right into this week just because there was a lot.
I'm going to say this week was a banger week for fucking news stories. So.
Jesus Christ. All right. So let's jump right in. Trump is found by a jury to have committed sexual assault and defamation against E. Jean Carroll and was forced to pay $5 million in damages. Maybe it's only going to be $5 million. We'll see, because I think that train might keep rolling.
Yeah, we might be back for a encore presentation in a couple of months here.
It's like, dude, just please stop talking. Look, you know, I made a quick little TikTok about this recently. Look, this is not a small deal, and I think most of the big parts of this are the political aspects of it, not just the, you know, was he found to be, liable for, a viable charge for sexual assault. From a political standpoint, do you really want a candidate who is on record now of being charged with this? This is not speculation anymore. He was not charged with rape.
Well, if you're Tommy Tuberville, apparently you do, because he said when they asked him about the verdict and how it changes his support for Trump, he said, it makes me want to vote for him twice. And if you think that's the stupidest thing Tommy Tuberville is going to say on this episode of Look Forward, wait till we get to this week in stupid.
Wow, dude, that guy is. Wow. Okay. All right. Wow. That guy's really dumb. Like cartoon villain dumb, right? Like, he's just, just a real moron. That's a really shitty thing to say about the potential rape of a woman. But, you know, these guys are just really – human is a fleeting adjective to describe them. So, like, look, I think this is a big deal. Again, politically, do you really want a candidate running for president who has this hanging over them? For the Republican Party, probably. They're like,
I'm gonna say, I can't imagine a political candidate where it's a benefit to have a recent sexual assault judgment levied against you right, as you're going into a presidential race.
Exactly. And so, look, the $5 million, that was more about like reputation recovery for E. Jean Carroll. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't mean anything. I'm sure it's nice to get $5 million. It doesn't change her life as far as what she went through. But I do find the idea of this happening, like this actually happening, him actually paying some level of consequence for something that he did, refreshing. And I would not be shocked. I don't know, but I would not be shocked if other women who have come out start to say, you know what? We can nickel and dime this piece of shit, because that's all he cares about is money anyway. Mm-hmm. Do it. I saw somebody responded to when I put this up on TikTok. They were like, well, she shouldn't have waited so long. You know, now she's just in it for the money. And I was like, okay, we're still making this argument. Like, in 2023, we're still making this
argument. Yeah, I was about to say, well, and not only that, but like, your point is correct. Like you said, the $5 million is not like a life changing thing for her. Like, she was in many ways kind of like the perfect jumping off point for a possible run of suits against him, because she doesn't need the money. Like, she's had a very successful career. She's a very wealthy individual. So like, it's not at all about money for her in this case.
Right. And you know, it's like the idea of, oh, well, why did she wait? It's like, dude, it's 2023. Let's say, I don't know how old this person was that responded, but let's say you're in your 30s, right? Mm-hmm. Or even you're like as late as your 50s. You have been around long enough to know that you have heard enough stories of women who have been sexually assaulted or been, you know, God forbid, raped and stuff like that, that do not talk about it initially, and they come up and talk about it much later. they're not all plotting together on this same aspect. It's because right. it's traumatic and they don't want to go through it. Or they're told by a friend that this particular person is very powerful and they'll try to destroy mm-hmm. you. Or like, there are many reasons women don't speak up. There are many kids who don't speak up of things that happened to them, right? Like, so were they all making it up too? No, dude, it's trauma. It's traumatic. Mm-hmm. It makes people operate in ways that are not like normal. Like they don't respond. Well, I would have just said it. You don't know that. You right. don't know.
Well, and again, no idea. Like I would say, you know, to an individual that says that, like put yourself in their shoes, and it doesn't have to be about sexual assault, but just imagine getting a megaphone and, you know, getting on top of a roof in the middle of like a big city and just fucking screaming to whoever would hear it about the most traumatic thing that's ever happened to you in your entire life. Would you do that? Because that's essentially what E. Jean Carroll did. Right. And maybe that's why it took her 20 years to, or 20 plus years to come forward on this.
Right. And now imagine you, and you know, I think that's a great way of putting it, but like double that, because the mm-hmm. person that you're speaking out against is a person who is incredibly powerful in that
right.
people will believe them because they have a TV show over you. Who are
and whose power grew in the time between when the incident happened and when she ultimately spoke out about it, and that power grew exponentially exactly. over that period of time. Like Donald Trump was, think of how powerful Donald Trump was in 1996, and then he became president. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't get much more of a jump than that. That's insane. Like if you're ignorant to be like, oh, why didn't she say something? Then you've obviously paid no attention to statistics about, you know, survivors of sexual assault and rape and sexual abuse and things like that, right. and the rates to which they're reported, because the successful like conviction rates, and this wasn't a criminal trial, but like conviction rates are like incredibly low,
exactly.
with a lot of these cases, because it's an incredibly difficult crime to prove unless there's physical evidence of some kind.
Yeah, it's just. And this guy's like, no, I believe her. Then what the fuck point are you making? Like, I was like, I'm not, I'm not going to go back and forth with you. Right. I was like, I'm not going to go back and forth with you. He's like, just because I wanted to see him actually go to jail. I'm like, that's not my point. Of course, every logical, reasonable person thinks he should actually go to jail for this. Right. But the point is, you're talking about you believe her, but you're also thinking she's in it for the money. I'm not sure how you square that circle. Mm-hmm. Like, okay. Yeah.
Now I do want to talk about the trial a little bit, because the trial, while, you know, like there was a lot of emotional, you know, testimony when E. Jean Carroll, you know, went up on the stand and especially battled it out with Joe Tacopina, who was Trump's lawyer in the trial. But so while this was going on, Trump is in Scotland, right? And so he at one of his properties out there. And he's interviewed by reporters like on the road or like as he's walking back to the clubhouse or whatever. And they're just like, you know, oh, like, you know, this trial that's going on. And he's like, oh, it's bullshit. It's not true. It's not true. And he's like, actually, I'm leaving Scotland early to go defend myself. Like, I'm going to go testify. Like, this is basically what he alluded to. And the judge saw this. And even like, so like the defense was ready to rest their case that Friday. And that's when this interview happened. And the judge is like, no, no, no. He's like, I'm going to afford your client every opportunity to make good on what he just said. He's coming home this weekend. I'm not going to let you rest the case until Monday, just so that if he wants to testify, he has the opportunity to come and do it since he's coming home right away. Yeah, did Donald Trump testify? He did not. He was full of shit. Everyone knew that he was. And so what the only defense that he was able to leverage for himself was from a recorded deposition that happened back in October pursuant to this case. Now, we had already seen a clip from this because they released some of the materials to the public in January. And so we had seen the clip and it made some waves, but it got refreshed again, where one of his core defenses and something that he's always said about E. Jean Carroll is, oh, I would never do that to her because she's not my type. She's not my type.
Yeah, that
and
clip is
during this
hilarious, dude.
During this deposition, like he was like, yeah, she's not my type, blah blah blah. They gave him a picture, and they're like, do you know this woman? And he's like, oh, that's Marla. He was like referring to Marla Maples, his ex-wife. oh, that's Marla. That's Marla. That's a picture of Marla. And they're like, no, that's E.G. and Carol. And so of course the logical inference was drawn, like, oh, you say she's not your type, but you just confused a picture of her with that of a woman that you married. Is it reasonable to think that a woman that you married is your type? Like I would assume that that's the case. But the more alarming bit of deposition given that also went super viral when they released this.
Not to interrupt you, but I just want to point out, as I'm looking up pictures of Marla Maples and E.G. Carroll, they don't even look alike. They really don't. Like,
well, he's also a 70 fucking 1 year old man with brain rot. So like, I can't expect him to identify faces correctly.
He's lost a lot of speed on that fastball. If it ever,
yeah, just a tad. But the other bit of really damning evidence is so in this deposition, they played back for him the famous fucking grab him by the pussy tape, mm-hmm. which came out during the election. And he instinctively went to like, oh, like I talked about that during the election's locker room talk, this other thing. And they asked him, they're like, do you believe that though? Like what you said, do you believe that stars like just have like are it's fine, like that, like they have the power to do that to a woman. And basically said, yeah, like I think if you look at like the past million years in human history, I would say that that's true. Fortunately, or unfortunate.
Yeah, I'm like,
and that's one of those. Well, that's one of those situations where his inability to speak coherently on his feet, and where he just says his mouth moves faster than his brain does, mm-hmm. and he just says stupid shit, really came back to bite him in the ass. Because in any insinuation that, oh no, it's very fortunate that very famous men can move on them like a bitch, as he said in the Access Hollywood tape, and commit sexual battery on a woman, alluding that that's a fortunate byproduct of being a famous and powerful man, it's not going to buy you points, I feel, with the jury in this case.
Again, the best thing you can ever do to Donald Trump is to press him in real time on shit. And mm-hmm. it will create nonsense, right? Like it just will. Now, that being said, which is the story we're going to pivot to next, you don't want to give this guy a live platform. It's not a good idea. It's not.
No, especially when you load it, when you a live platform in front of an audience that's loaded with his supporters.
Yeah. All of them. Not some of them. All of them were virulent Trump supporters.
Yeah.
That was bullshit. Like, dude, the guy has an approval rating of like 25%. I want a mixed audience because I want to see – I want those people to ask questions.
Well, isn't that what town halls are supposed to be?
Yes.
Anyway, so of course, referring to the CNN town hall that they literally conducted with him the night after the verdict was announced. So like, so here's a guy, he's been convicted or not convicted, not a criminal trial. He's been judged to be found guilty of sexual assault. And you're going to platform this dude in front of his people. Like as I said in our Discord group, basically he got like, this was the equivalent of a home game for him.
Yeah.
And you're going to platform him. Really? Like that's a good idea for a quote unquote serious news agency as CNN purports to be, and yet finds themselves sliding quickly away from being as the months roll by.
Yeah, you can't out Fox, dude. Like it doesn't work. No. There's only OAN. OAN and Newsmax to do that shit. Like, and you got to be on the far extreme. You can't try to like we're not quite Fox, but we're just slightly to the left of them. It doesn't work. It doesn't work.
And Caitlin Collins, like, so like there was a lot of back and forth of her getting dragged and her and people like, coming to her defense, mostly people in the news organizations coming to her defense. Yeah. I thought that she did fine. Like I think the problem was with CNN, not with her specifically. Oh, yeah. Like I feel like they put her in an impossible situation. But she, like the thing that I don't understand, if you're going to interview Donald Trump, if you don't go and watch back the Axios interview that Jonathan Swan did with him.
Exactly.
What are you doing then? Because, like, he showed the only effective way to interview this guy is to be persistent, to push back against his nonsense, which, and again, much tougher to do with a live audience. They're jeering you because they're fucking like jeering Caitlin Collins as like she's asking him questions and shit like that, which is insane to me.
That's
something that they would do. But that's how you have to do it. Like, you can't let him just pivot off with his nonsense. And instead, you have to get him to present you like fucking weird graphs that don't say what they're actually trying to say to make him look and then look fucking confused as shit because you know he's full of crap and that you know he's feeding you bullshit. And she tried to follow up. But again, he was too like the problem with giving him a live audience is that he thrives off of that energy.
Right. He plays
like it helps him, exactly. Helps him immensely. And that's exactly what he did. And kind of the worst exchange that they had, or the most notable exchange, is she was pressing him about the classified document situation. And he was trying to be like, oh, you know, like this is bold, you know, that's messed up that, you know, they didn't raid Joe Biden's house. They didn't raid Mike Pence's house. They raided, you know, my house and this or the other thing. And she kept trying to push him to like about the Presidential Records Act and what it says, where like, hey, these are property of the federal government, not you. And she said something along the lines of like, I want to answer the question. And he called her a nasty person, which, you know, harkens back, of course, to the fucking Hillary Clinton debate as well. Brought like incredible cheers from the fucking audience when he said that shit. So,
yeah, it's interesting, right? Like, this idea of how do you cover this guy? He is a presidential candidate, so you can't just not cover him because that's not fair. And he's the front runner. So he's not to be a dick about it, but like he's not Vivek Ramaswamy, who's not going to go anywhere and is a fucking joke. So you could technically just ignore that guy. This guy's a front runner. This guy's a former president. You have to cover him. But he's also a massive liar and an arsonist.
Right.
And you can't just let this guy have free reign. Right. Your point that Jonathan Swan's interview for Axios was the way to do it.
I might be watering down a hyperbolic term, but I feel like that to describe him is accurate. I would you called him an arsonist. I would call him a media terrorist.
I'll take
would that. Be the term that I would use for him.
Yeah. I don't think that's incorrect. I mean, look, Chris Hayes had a whole statement about this idea of like, how do you cover this guy? Right. And it was a really good, breakdown. And I actually really appreciated his thoughts on it. His point was this guy is trying to destroy democracy in this country.
Right.
It is not a thing to be debated. It is a thing to defeat, right? Like,
yeah.
And that is a fundamental weirdness of the media that they have to understand. You cannot put Joe Biden is working on the economy on one side, trying to make the country better, whether he's doing that in your opinion or not. That's not my point, right? Like, but that's his stance. I'm making the country better. Life is better. If I'm in charge, things are better, right? The world is better. Versus, I want to destroy the fundamentals of this country and let me rebuild it in my own image, right? Like, he's not running to be the next president. He's running to be the last president, right? The forever president. Like, so how do you cover him? And I think the way you cover him is you don't do fucking town halls anymore.
No.
None for either candidate. You do not do them. Nobody, because he is a threat to democracy in a way that we've never seen before. You cannot give this guy free reign. He has to be the only time you should do a live event with him should be the fucking debates. That's it.
And here's what really pissed me off. So CNN, of course, you know, knowing the backlash is coming, went overboard to try to kind of justify their position. Now, of course, they cynically did this for ratings. And I find it hilarious that while they did get a bump up in ratings, he drew less of an audience on TV than a Joe Biden town hall did a couple years ago in 2021, which I found hilarious. And it went right back down to their normal levels. They didn't have any carryover in the audience. So I find that very funny. But I'll tell you what I don't find funny. I don't find funny Anderson Cooper getting up there on the CNN 9 p.m. show last night.
A little lecture.
and basically chastising anyone who dare criticize, like, oh, like, you may never want to watch CNN again, but, like you can't – that like, it's like – but if you're doing that, like, you don't learn anything by – I'm paraphrasing what he said, but you don't learn anything if you are siloed away in your information environment. And here's why you're full of shit, Anderson Cooper. Because – last night was not an opportunity to see Donald Trump, the presidential candidate, and test him against like the real American people. Because if that was what you were interested in doing, you would have had a mixed audience and you would have had people who voted against him or are just, you know, Democrat or left leaning to ask him difficult questions to and press him on specific issues and make him struggle under questions that are difficult for him to answer. But that's not what you did. Instead, what you did is you packed in the audience with sycophants of his, with supporters of his, and it became like a fucking pep rally for Donald Trump for all intents and purposes.
That's 100% it, right? That's 100% correct. Look, this is the fundamental issue with the media. Whatever you think of, you know, the quote-unquote mainstream media, this is the major issue. Democrats are required to take on hard questions. Democrats are required to give details to their plans. Democrats are required to be the adults in the room. Republicans are given a handicap of 1,000 because the media knows in their heart of hearts, whether you're the quote unquote liberal part of the media, like the MSNBCs or whatever, or you're the quote unquote middle of the road, which they're just terrible, CNN, or you're the right wing, you know, Fox News and OAN and those guys. No matter where you live on that spectrum, everyone knows the Democrats are the adults in the room and the Republicans are like fucking children. And they are given so much leeway and we got to stack the deck for Donald Trump by putting his entire audience. They would run a fucking town hall with nothing but Trump supporters in a Biden town hall. They'd be like, good luck, Joe. Why can't you answer these, right? The prime example of this is, I will never fucking forget it, 2010's midterm election, Republicans are like, we've got some great ideas to fix this country. And the media's like, cool, can you tell us what those are? And they were like, no, it's a secret. Just vote for us.
It's a surprise. Trust us.
And they just let that shit rock. They never had any answers. They did absolutely nothing in preparation for getting into office. They were voted into office because the media didn't hold them to account. And what did they do? Absolutely fuck all when they got in power. That's all they did. Because you didn't hold them to the fire. You would never do that with Democrats.
There's a phrase.
You will never do that with them.
There's a figure of speech that you used to use a lot that you don't really use anymore, and I understand why you don't use it. But basically, the media doesn't call double dribble on Republicans, essentially.
Yeah, there's a Chris Rock joke there, but
yeah,
but like, yeah, I don't use that term. I don't do that one anymore. But it's apt, right? And it's true.
Yes.
You can't call them on it because I mean, this is why when the media says, or why Republicans say it's unfair how Republicans are treated, it is unfair. But you think that you're being hammered because somebody will ask you real questions occasionally. The reality is you feel that way because they almost never do.
Right.
They almost never do. The questions that Joe Biden will get by the press versus what Donald Trump would get by the press when they were both presidents is marketably different. It's marketably different. They're like, oh, you know, Joe Biden is not giving us enough detail on X, Y, and Z. Meanwhile, Donald Trump is screaming at you over the sound of Marine One going in the background talking about, I'm going to make everything great. And it's like the Chiron. Oh, president says you're going to make everything
great. That's the issue. That's the issue, that the media treats – the media operates from the point of assumption that Republicans are honest brokers acting in good faith. And they're not.
They're not.
And but when you treat them like they are and you just allow them to fucking speak whatever bullshit they speak to, you're not holding them to account at that point. You're not. Like it's there. We'll talk about this when we get, because there's a Joe Biden story coming up around the debt ceiling. But there was a key moment where, again, the media is just kind of parroting Republican talking points, and Joe Biden fucking called them out.
Yeah, he did. They got it. Pissed.
Yeah, pissed. Yeah, and rightly so, because again, like, you're just saying bullshit without actually speaking to facts. You're not speaking to what's actually happening.
Yeah, and that's the thing that Republicans or the media does with Republicans all mm-hmm. the time. Well, Democrats,
well, Republicans been working this? The refs for. Yeah, they've been working the rest for decades. I mean, that goes back to the 60s and 70s when Republicans were pigeonholed in Congress as the minority party. They got a president in pretty frequently, but Congress was overwhelmingly, especially the House, was overwhelmingly Democratic for 50 years. And so they've had plenty of time to fucking work the media, work the establishment, fucking bitch and moan. And it's the same thing in a sports game. Like, when you bitch at the ref and bitch and bitch and bitch and bitch, the ref finally gets tired of fucking hearing you bitch. And so they call a soft call against your opponent just to shut you the fuck up. And that's what Republicans have been doing for years with the media. They've been bitching about unfair treatment. And the media's like, fucking A, like, come on. Like, all right, fine. Like, we'll just fucking go easier on you, I guess, because you keep complaining all the time.
Yeah. And if they ever go hard on them on anything, and by go hard, meaning asking substantive, detailed questions,
treating them the same way they would treat a Democrat.
Right. Then immediately look at this liberal bias. Look, mm-hmm. look, here's a term that is absolutely insane to me. Gotcha journalism.
Yeah.
I asked you a question. You didn't know the answer. That's gotcha journalism. You mean you didn't know? Just say that.
Yeah.
What newspapers do you read? Well, that's gotcha journalism. Is it? Is it, Sarah Palin? Is it? Like, it's not. You're the fucking vice president.
We saw another example of this today where, you know, Ted Cruz and a bunch of Republican senators were on the border. This is another thing that went viral online. And a reporter asks him. Yeah, a reporter asks, because, like, Ted Cruz and them are bitching about, like, oh, Biden's ruining the border, this area, the other thing, blah, 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 blah. And a reporter asks him, well, what have you done to help Joe Biden, the Biden administration, with stuff at the border? And Cruz immediately attacks the dude and saying, like, oh, you're just trumpeting Democrat talking points and this or the other thing. And then pivots to a statement that's missing just a shred of context, just a little bit, where he talks about how illegal border crossings in 2020 during the Trump administration were a record low, without, of course, mentioning something else that was going on in 2020 that may have been a contributing factor to border crossings being at record lows.
Look, Brad, get your facts, details, and pandemic the fuck out of here. But again, Cruz's point, he goes, like you said, like, oh, you're just parroting, you know, Democratic points. And then when he's pushed and pushed and pushed, what is his actual response? Well, I champion the border, the border control. I champion, you know, the guys at the border who are fighting it. Okay, so championing it isn't still actually doing anything, Ted.
Yeah, you're a legislator, just in case you didn't know. Like, sorry, sitting on the sidelines being like, go CPD, go. Like, that's not exactly what we're looking for here, buddy.
Again, if we could just get press passes, that'd be great. I have a question, Jay from Thugs of News. Okay, so is cheerleading actually like playing in a football game? Because it's not, right? The Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders are not the same as I don't watch sports anymore. Troy Aikman throwing a football, right? Like,
yeah. That's how Senator Cruz, are you a legislator or a podcaster? And if you're just a podcaster, can we stop paying your salary, please?
Yes.
Like, is that okay?
are you more popular than Dan Bongino? I think not. I think. Who the fuck are you? Who even are you? So yeah,
he said podcasting is a very important part of his job as a senator.
Did he really say that?
He really did say that. Yes,
wow,
he did.
Wow, amazing, amazing. I mean, look, bro, people listen. I mean, they listen to his show. I, for fuck knows why. I can't imagine. No, thank you. I find that guy.
Look, I'm just saying, Ben Cardin is stepping down, Jay. Think it's maybe time to throw my hat in the ring and you can be my chief of staff from Mexico.
Hey,
and we're going to make this happen.
That's right. From all over the world.
Remote chief of staff. I'll just get an iPad on a tripod and just have you like roboting around the office.
Yeah, basically. No, that's fine. They have that. They sell it at the Apple store. It's like it's on wheels.
Yeah.
It's just an iPad like. Hello everyone. All right. And
I'm gonna punch Ted Cruz in the face every day. It's literally the only thing I'll do in the Senate.
As your chief of staff, I can't dissuade you. I can only encourage you to ramp up your numbers. that's all I can tell you.
That'll be my whole platform in Maryland. Like, what are you going to do for the people of Maryland? Like, I'm going to punch Ted Cruz in the face on a daily basis, and you guys will get to see it happen on television.
It's like, my only question, will that be available on YouTube or on Daily Motion? I just need to know where to watch. It'll be on all
social media platforms.
it will be in 4K. Don't you worry.
That's right.
Next up, I'm not sure there's a – well, this guy feels like his pitch meeting, his internal pitch meeting was, mm-hmm. You know how Trump lies a lot? I bet I can beat it. George Santos pleads not guilty to federal indictment and says he won't resign. I really wish he would.
George Santos is like the Joe Bluth of fucking Congress people.
Yeah, like every time he pops up, it's like, I've made a grave mistake.
I made a terrible mistake.
U.S. Representative George Santos, infamous for fabricating his life story. Yeah. Pretty pleaded not guilty Wednesday to charges he duped donors, stole from his campaign, and lied to Congress about being a millionaire, all while cheating to collect unemployment benefits he didn't deserve. Afterwards, he said he won't drop drop his reelection bid and defied calls to resign. Santos's 13-count federal indictment was a reckoning for a web of fraud and deceit that prosecutors say overlapped with the New York Republicans' fantastical public image as a wealthy businessman, a fictional biography that began to unravel after he won election last fall.
Dude, he's going to big boy jail.
Yeah.
13 counts, including wire fraud, money laundering, and lying to Congress. And defrauding the federal government with this COVID unemployment scam that he ran, apparently.
This guy,
good luck.
He's super. But this is good.
Yeah.
Right? This is a good thing. One, get him the fuck out of there. Right. Like mm-hmm. one less asshole there. I like.
Well,
that.
Maybe. Because when asked about this indictment, Kevin McCarthy said, if he's convicted. I will encourage him to resign. real showing some real conviction there, Big Kev.
Like
so dude, showing some real stones.
Like, dude, all you have to say is if he's convicted, he needs to vote him out.
Yeah, we will expel him.
Yeah, just expel him.
Yeah.
Like you don't have like what other Republicans sitting there being like, you better not get it. You better not expel him if he gets convicted. Dude, he's
gonna get convicted. There's one. There's one. His name is Kevin McCarthy because he fucking needs George Santos's vote in Congress because if they have a special election in his district, I got news for you. It's not gonna be won by a Republican. The reelect is probably not gonna be won by a Republican anyway. Because
I don't think Santos would win anyway.
No, it's a traditionally Democratic district anyway, and like you said, he scored an upset victory. And in the wake of this, if he even runs again, there's no fucking way that they're gonna vote him in. But Kevin McCarthy just wants to hang on to that vote for as long as he possibly fucking can.
Sure. Look, Santos, 34, was released on a $500,000 bond following his arraignment. You can see
that 34. How did he do? How's he done so much crime in his life at such a young age? He's young. He's younger than you and I, Jay, by several years.
I don't know. This guy is an amazing grifter. Dude. Like yeah. This guy hasn't met a grift he didn't love.
I also have to like also kind of stand in awe because there's a picture, like there's video of him outside of the courthouse after he was arraigned. This might have been back in DC. It's 75 degrees out. Dude is still wearing sports coat, sweater,
yes,
sweater, and dress shirt combination. Dude, it is May. What are you doing?
Yeah, I
it's
don't.
It's gonna be hot.
Yeah, I don't really fucking get that. But you know, I just don't pretend to understand it. I really don't. This guy, he's hella into crime. He's a crime scene.
There's no way he's not pleading guilty, right? Like, he has to plead guilty to this.
No,
shit.
He didn't plead.
No, guilty. I know he did. Yet. I'm saying he's going to eventually.
No, because the government's going to run this one all the way out.
No, because the government is going to show him their evidence in pretrial, and they're going to be like, I really think it's a good idea for you to fucking plead guilty, my dude. And his lawyer's going to look at that evidence and turn to George Santos and be like, hey, George Santos, I really think you should plead guilty to these fucking crimes because you're going to go to jail for a really long time.
Nah, it's a witch hunt. Get out of here. Like, look, that sweater, he wears that sweater because he got that from all those unemployment benefits he's been stealing. That's his favorite sweater from his favorite crime.
Look, let it never be said. If you, dear listener that's listening out there right now, and Jay, maybe we'll even put this on TikTok, so I could be speaking to the entire Chinese government. If you are going to be a massive grifter and defraud people and businesses and institutions of a shitload of money, do yourself a favor and lay low. Stay under the radar. Don't go and run for political office.
He can't help himself.
George Santos could have been pulling that grift and just made his money and just been George Santos or whatever the fuck his actual name is, which I can't remember what it was, but it's not George Santos.
Pablo Escobar. Yeah. I don't know, dude. this guy, man, how do you think this is going to shake out for you, dude? Like, I you're 100% right. Why are you doing hella crimes and then being like, why don't I get into public office? Why?
I saw a tweet that said, I can't wait till George Santos goes to jail, and on his first day there, he tells his cellmate that he's a former UFC middleweight champion.
Undefeated. And look, and he will lie. He will do whatever it takes. Because that guy is a massive, massive fucking liar. But I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. Good for you, buddy. So
see, this is the kind of fun Republican bullshit that I can get behind. Like, I love having a fucking clown to just help bring some levity to the serious situations that we are seeing in the Republican Congress right now.
Right. There's nothing like George Santos while stealing unemployment checks and that's reprehensible type of shit. He's not like condemning. Well, maybe he does. I don't know. He's still a Republican, but like he's not out there like we need to destroy trans kids' lives. Right. He's just stealing money. And so you can just be like, this guy's just a dirtbag. Like he's like a regular 80s political villain. You're like, yeah, OK, I can get behind disliking this guy without being like, wow, you should probably walk into traffic. Right. Like you're not hurting anybody. You're just being a scumbag for money, which from a political crimes perspective, I can respect it. I can at least respect it. But the thing I like about George Santos the most is the brazenness. Like,
yeah,
he's brazen, man. And that makes for a good 1980s political
very easy, very easy to root against. Very, very enjoyable. A love to hate sort of guy.
Right. Embattled Representative George Santos co-sponsors unemployment fraud bill after being charged with that crime.
Literally brazen, the day after.
Brazen.
The House passed it with his vote.
Yeah, just brazen.
With his vote.
I would love if that becomes law and that's one of the laws that he is officially down for breaking and then they throw the fucking book at him. Like that's a good Wikipedia entry.
It might be the only law that gets passed. Well, no, it probably won't pass, but it might be the only law that gets passed that he actually sponsored. And wouldn't that be one of the most ironic things ever?
Is the one that took him down? The measure called Protecting Taxpayers and Victims of Unemployment Fraud Act passed 230 to 200 would provide incentives to help states recover money lost to COVID unemployment fraud. And there's a lot of it. Under the bill, states would retain 25% of recovered fraudulent overpayments, and the statute of limitations for federal criminal charges or civil enforcement actions related to unemployment insurance fraud would be extended from 5 to 10 years. On Wednesday, Santos was indicted on 13 criminal counts, including allegedly fraudulently applying for and receiving unemployment benefits during the COVID pandemic, when he actually had a $120,000 salary working as a regional director of an investment firm, according to the charging documents. So you were getting paid $120,000 and you were still stealing money from poor people.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Great. Santos allegedly applied to receive New York State unemployment insurance benefits, falsely claiming that he had been unemployed since March 22nd, 2020, prosecutors said in charging documents. He is also accused of collecting more than $24,000 in benefits when he actually had a $120,000 salary working, as we said, as a regional director. Yeah. Cool, bro. I hope it passed, and I hope you get leveled by it. That sounds awesome. But again, he's only doing that so they can go, well, of course I didn't do it. I co-sponsored a bill to stop this. Why are you putting handcuffs on me, officer? I did nothing wrong. Sure, I can put my head down in the squad car. I got it. What a fucking idiot. What a fucking idiot.
Oh, my God. Tremendous.
This will not save you, bro. This will not save you.
Tremendous. Yep.
Amazing. Next up, Biden ain't blinking against feckless speaker in debt ceiling showdown. You want to take this?
Yeah. So Joe Biden is stiffening his spine when it comes to battling the Republicans. So basically, he has been meeting with House and Senate leadership. So he's meeting with, you know, McConnell, Schumer, Hakeem Jeffries, and Ken McCarthy. And Ken McCarthy is trying to spin a tale of Joe Biden refusing to negotiate with the debt ceiling, when Biden has very clearly said that the debt ceiling is non-negotiable. We will fucking raise the debt ceiling so that we don't default on our bills. And the only person who's not willing to take default off of the table is indeed Kevin McCarthy. Right. So this kind of expressed itself in two different ways. First of which you may have seen, because there was a viral clip that went around of a reporter basically in a press conference asking Joe Biden why he's not negotiating with Republicans on the debt ceiling. And Biden, and I'm paraphrasing here, but Biden's like, yeah, who told you that? Kevin McCarthy told you that. Cool. He's like, you know, but why aren't you negotiating what's in their bill? He's like, negotiate what? What's in their bill? And he even told the reporter, like, I'm not trying to be a wise ass. Like, I want you to tell me, like, what's in their bill. And the reporter's like, I don't know. And he's like, that's kind of the point, isn't it? like it's not about, like, they're not talking about targeted cuts. They're talking about just general cutting. And Joe Biden said rightly that his administration has kind of taken more of a chunk out of the deficit than any administration has since basically Clinton, because of the legislation they passed, the Inflation Reduction Act, and also higher tax rates for corporations, because guess what? There's two ways to cut a deficit down. One is by cutting expenditure. The other is by bringing more money in. And this administration has brought more money in. It's funny how everyone seems to forget that second part of the equation when they're talking about deficit cutting. But isn't that funny? But the other thing that he said is that he's signaling that he's weighing options to take debt ceiling default off the table in the future, by using the 14th Amendment as a tool to support this. Now, he did clarify that he's not talking about using the 14th Amendment in this scenario, because it would have to be litigated, and we don't know what would happen if, you know, he was to invoke that now, and it would have to go through legislation, and we'd obviously miss the deadline to raise the debt ceiling. But basically, the 14th Amendment can be argued to say that the country must raise the debt ceiling to cover its expenditures, because I can't remember the exact text of the amendment, excellent.
Yeah, 14th Amendment reads, quote, the validity of the public debt of the United States authorized by law, including debts incurred for payment of pensions and bounties for services in suppressing insurrection or rebellion, shall not be questioned.
So basically, the argument would be that the 14th Amendment says you can't allow the country to default. You have to pass a debt ceiling increase because the Constitution says you have to, because you can't question the debts that we run up in conducting the business of government. And that's an interesting argument to make. It would have to be litigated. It would have to go through the Supreme Court. And who the fuck knows what would happen in that scenario with the way the court is currently constituted. But if successful, it would effectively destroy this crisis that we have seemed to find ourselves in every couple of years for the past fucking decade and a half.
Manufactured crisis, right?
Yes.
This is a manufactured crisis. Look, for folks who don't know what the debt ceiling debate is, it's very simple. You go out to a restaurant, you eat all the food you want, you order off the menu, you do a la carte, you're balling out of control, whatever. Or you're being frugal. Doesn't matter, right? You're on a first date and you're like, I'm going to have a salad, right? Like whatever bullshit people do. When that bill comes, there's no negotiating. Yeah. Well, I'd like to make – could you take the lobster off? I'm already done with it. Like that's not how it works, right?
Well, the Republican response to this – in your analogy, is to sit there with the bill in front of them at the restaurant being like, man, we should probably not eat out as much as we normally do. But right, meanwhile, right. There's still a fucking bill in front of you that you need
also,
to pay.
Also, they're wiping their mouth as they've been eating along with the Democrats. Like,
in fact, you could argue that they ordered the most expensive food at the table.
That is correct. $2.5 trillion worth, right?
Like, right.
Like, what are you talking about? So the bill comes where you're partying at this restaurant and it's the worst part of the evening, right? You actually have to fucking pay.
Right.
The bill comes. The debt ceiling is, here's my card. Fucking pay the bill. And again, right. Republicans are like, man, we should definitely not do this. So we're just going to sit here until they grab us by the scruff of our neck and make us wash dishes at the end of the night. We should just sit here and be obstinate about it. Like, no, dude, you've already spent this money. You have already enjoyed the fruits of whatever, you know, things you wanted to buy, whether that's supporting citizens or going to war or whatever, right? You have already committed to spending that money because you already ate your dinner. And that is the agreement that you have with our creditors, aka the restaurant. You eat it up.
Right.
You pay at the end of the day. So the debt ceiling is not what Republicans say it is. And this is, again, this is an easy one to understand. But the media will always go, we don't understand how the debt ceiling works. Maybe it's – no. It's very simple. These are things you've already spent money on. You're just giving them your card. That's all it is. That's all it is. Hey, bro, you want to split No, we're not splitting it. Cool. Here's my card. That's
it. And what's funny is like the Republicans are basically trying to hold the debt ceiling hostage. But it's really like they're taking a hostage, but they're pointing the gun at themselves, essentially, because yes. Like that's essentially what's going on here. Like, we're going to shoot ourselves in the face if you guys don't do what we want. And we're just like, I feel like that would be a bad idea for you, but we're going to go ahead and just not do that.
Look, look, there's an estimate that if the debt ceiling were to come and go without it being increased, that Americans would lose 7 million jobs. Boom. Right off the top. I forget what the second largest state to suffer from this, but the largest would be Texas. And the third largest would be New York. Oh, it's Texas, Florida, and New York. They would lose like 1.5 million employees combined. Like day one, y'all got to go. Like,
and you know what's fucked up is there is a non-insignificant amount of Republicans that would absolutely do that if it 100%. Helped them win more votes.
Which is
Donald Trump's out here during this fucking town hall being like, oh, I think we should try it and see what happens. Like, really? Like, that's people's lives and people's livelihoods that you're just willing to just fucking like, yeah, let's roll the dice. Let's spin the wheel. See what comes up.
Like,
you never know. It might be great.
Like, you're sacrificing the full faith and credit of the United States. And yeah. And here's the thing.
This and it wouldn't not, just be us, by the way. Wouldn't just be us.
It's a like catastrophic that. Thing to happen across the world.
Yeah.
So many economies live and die on, like, we're propped up by, like, okay, our money is worth X. We are trying to convert it to dollars so that it keeps our economy going. That is a very powerful mm-hmm. fucking weapon around the world. If the US dollar suddenly drops in value by a lot,
mm-hmm.
what does that do? That is a catastrophic situation across the world.
Right.
No, thank you.
And here's what pisses me off. Like, I don't agree with Republicans playing these games, because I think fucking around with stuff that can truly ruin in a very quick and felt and quick manner people's ability to earn a living is fucked up. But if you're going to have these fucking pissing matches, do it over the fucking budget. Okay? Fucking yeah. do it over the budget. Threaten your government shutdowns, because we all know you guys love a government shutdown, because it works out so well for you every fucking time you do it, let me tell you. But you want to fuck around with that? Play with your own fucking money. You know what I mean? Like yep. you know, do it yourself. This would be so fucking stupid. I can't even imagine it. Now, I truly don't believe that Kevin McCarthy will actually vote to default and get his people to vote to default if it comes down to it, because the Senate doesn't want to do that. And Mitch McConnell will fucking walk across the fucking Capitol and slap him in the face and be like, what the fuck are you doing? You dumb idiot. Right. Fucking vote to raise the debt ceiling. But the problem is that Kevin McCarthy doesn't have control of his caucus.
He is not.
And there are absolutely enough mavericks, and I use that term as disingenuously as I can, in the Republican caucus that would absolutely tank this shit if they don't get some kind of concession. That's what worries me yeah. more than anything.
Yeah, it is interesting, right? Like, when you talk about people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, or like the sort of, let's call them Magvrits, right? Like, these are the MAGA mavericks over there, right? Like, these people don't really understand how this works, mm-hmm. right? Like, they don't, like, it's one thing to disingenuously explain what the debt ceiling is, right? Like, Kevin McCarthy, oh, I don't know, how does it work, everybody? Right? Like, he understands. He's being a disingenuous asshole, but he understands. The ultra MAGA people, the Lauren Boberts, the Marjorie Taylor Greens or whatever, they don't actually understand it mm-mm. because they're not bright. At all
to them, it's just a talking point, or just a fucking
exactly.
And that's what it doesn't have. It doesn't have a tangible fucking. It's not a tangible thing to them,
right? And because of that, that makes them actually dangerous, right? That is a fundamental response to keep putting dumb, ignorant people in power. Is that when smart people are like, bro, there's a meteor coming towards the fucking Capitol, and they're like, huh, he said meteor. That's funny. I don't give a shit. What's a meteor? Oh, my head's on fire now, right? Like, because they don't, they fundamentally don't understand what this is. They don't understand the seriousness of that. They don't understand the global impact of that. They don't understand the domestic impact of that. They don't understand it because they have staked out a position. Democrats want X. So Republicans mm-hmm. have to want Y. It doesn't matter if it makes sense to want X. Democrats didn't – like, here's how you know Democrats are the adults in the room versus being the children that the Republicans are. How many fights did you have about the debt ceiling when Trump was president? Zero. You know why?
They raised it three times.
Right.
While he was president.
Because when it came up
– didn't hear a word about it.
Nope.
Because Democrats aren't going to fucking
– And by the way, yeah. Republicans didn't say we need to cut a bunch of shit either. They just raised it.
Yep.
Because it was important, because the people who were in charge knew it was important, and it wasn't a political football mm-hmm. to play around with. But when Democrats are in power, now Republicans have an ability to fuck it up. And now people like the Marjorie Taylor Greens and the Lauren Boberts who don't understand it, they have more power in the caucus now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a dangerous time. It's a really, really dangerous time.
It's so fucking dumb. And again, I lay some blame on Democrats here, to be quite frank. You had a lame duck session, or even before the lame duck session, since the possibility of rear. But you had a lame duck session to be like, man, we really probably don't want Republicans to be able to use this as a fucking tool against us. You could have passed legislation to just raise the debt ceiling for the next 3 years, essentially, and you wouldn't have had to fucking worry about it until past the 2024 election. That's number one. Number two, you have dumb fuck idiots Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema out here being like, I don't know, maybe we do need to talk about making some cuts and being more frugal and blah, 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 in response to the fucking debt ceiling conversation.
That's a pretty solid Kyrsten Sinema impression.
Yeah. Now, fortunately, there's not enough Republicans in the Senate that are morons that would vote to fucking tank this thing.
No, they're not.
Which is good. So even if you lose Manchin and Sinema, like, you still probably would get the fucking bill passed, no problem, in the Senate. But again, the fact remains that Democrats are not completely blameless in this situation as well. You could have just taken the bullets out of the gun.
Yeah, and look, I think partially they like the fight, right? They mm-hmm. like the idea of being able to say, see, look how extreme MAGA Republicans are, or the Republican Party in general is.
Yeah, but you would have had that fucking fight anyway when it came to fucking funding the government.
A Tuesday. There's always a crazy thing they believe. Right, you don't have to put the full faith and credit of the American economy. You don't have to bet it on a horse, basically, which is what you're doing. Right. So, like, don't do that. Like, I agree. Democrats are 100% to blame for not taking the bullets out of the gun. Dude, just end this. This is not a thing we need to be fucking around with. It's stupid.
End it forever.
Yeah.
Like you could, and I don't know if you could actually get it passed because there's not enough people that fucking vote for it. But theoretically, you could pass legislation that basically has an automatic trigger that it's like whenever the debt ceiling needs to be raised to cover our expenses, it will be raised by X amount. And that trigger just keeps on fucking happening and happening and happening into perpetuity. And then you never have to worry about this dumb shit again.
Absolutely. Yeah. Look. It's not worth the fight. It's just not worth the fight. So just take the shit off the table. Like by the way,
we're one of two first world countries in the world who has a debt ceiling. Yeah. It's us and it's fucking Denmark. And everyone else is like, this is stupid. We're not fucking doing this because it's dumb.
Yeah, it's a political fight, not worth it. Okay, so this is a hilarious story, right? So apparently the Republican Party is working overtime to try to come up. They are desperate to come up with a, like, let's impeach Biden on something. Like, we got to get him, right? And they just can't find anything, which is funny to me. But they're now pushing this money laundering, like, pay for play kind of thing with, like, the Biden crime family, whatever the fuck this means. Who knows, right? And so what Republicans presented on, quote, Judgment Day was a memo outlining more than $10 million in payments received by members of the Biden family from foreign businesses between 2015 and 2017. But the findings lacked a crucial detail, concrete evidence linking Joe Biden to the dealings with his family members. The omission was so stark that even the president's most fervent critics on Fox felt the need to confront Republicans over this. So here is the clip, because it is beautiful. This is Comer on, I guess, on Fox and Friends, talking to
against noted resistance lib,
Steve Doocy. Welcome to the resistance. This is fucking hilarious.
I know the Republicans said that the smoking gun were these financial records that you were able to subpoena and got your hands on. They show that some of the president's relatives were paid more than $10 million from foreign sources between 2015 and 2017. And your party, the Republican investigators, say that that's proof of influence peddling by Hunter and James. But that's just your suggestion. You don't actually have any facts to that point. You've got some circumstantial evidence. And the other thing is, of all those names, the one person who didn't profit is there's no evidence that Joe Biden did anything illegally.
Well, if you look at the laptop and the emails between the president's son and his associates,
I'm sorry. They're still on the laptop, guys. They're still on the laptop. There's like 9 of them. And they're all getting passed around. They're still on this whole laptop thing.
To great lengths to hide Joe's involvement. They even gave him nicknames. They called him the Celtic and the big guy. But
it's his dad. Like, yeah, people have nicknames for him. It's his dad. Like, there's nothing sinister about calling your dad the big guy. No. Like that. Like, people do that all the time.
Make no mistake, Joe Biden was involved. All these countries that the Bidens were receiving money from were countries that Joe Biden was actively visiting in. Many of these countries were receiving foreign aid.
He was visiting? Like that's he visited these countries. That's your argument? He was a former vice president.
That Joe Biden volunteered with the Obama administration to be in charge of. We look now at the Biden presidency. Many of the decisions he's made with respect to China that I would argue put China first and America last would leave most Americans scratching their head. Why would any president do this? So we know that the complexity of the way the Biden set these shell companies up were made to try to disguise not only the money they were receiving, but also Joe's involvement. So we're at the very beginning stages of this. But in talking with the informants that we have, some of the former Biden associates that nobody's heard from yet, we know that Joe Biden was actively involved, and we're still looking for more bank records that we believe will implicate Joe Biden's active participation in this at the end of the day.
You set up 20.
There's a meme that somebody posted around in the wake of the story of Lionel Hutz, which James Cobra kind of looks like Lionel Hutz, by the way, I must say. But it's like, what is your evidence? Like, well, we have hypotheses and conjecture. Those are kinds of evidence.
Dude, I love that. He just says things like as if they're just true. Yeah. And he goes, well, make no mistake, Joe Biden is involved.
Yeah.
Based on what?
nothing that you have, certainly.
Like, he's like, he's involved, though. He has to be. Everyone knows it. And, you know, that's kind of where basis is.
And basically, like, they've admitted, not in so many words, but they've admitted that they're like, hey, like, we did this so that someone else will pick up this ball and run with it. And we're just like, bro, there's no there. Like worst case scenario, his fucking sons are trading on his name to make money.
Yeah, that never happens with any other sons.
No, certainly not the son of former or current presidents, I will tell you.
Impossible. It's impossible.
And again, like if you've got a problem with the Biden family receiving $10 million over 2 years, have I got a whopper of a fucking foreign influence peddling deal to share with you to the tune of, what, 200 times that? If I'm not mistaken,
$2.5 billion from a guy who had a journalist bone sawed to death. Yeah, okay.
Right. All right.
Meanwhile, they're like, Hunter Biden sleeps with prostitutes. I'm like, and does cocaine. I'm like, I think those are kind of things you do together. Like you get a biscuit when you order chicken at Popeyes. Like it is what it is. Like that's, I'm sorry. Like that's not that crazy to me.
Oh my God!
This guy's doing a lot of coke and sleeping with prostitutes. Shit.
Yeah,
that's what you do there. But again, not running for president. He's not the president. But I love that.
No.
We have evidence. What evidence? You just wait and see. You just
trust us.
Trust us. I don't. But here's why I find that video really funny. And look, shout out to Steve Doocy for actually like being like a legitimate like normal person there and being like, but you don't have any evidence. But I don't think it's because Steve Doocy is a real stand-up journalist. I think it's because when you have to remember that you just got sued for $787 million for saying a bunch of bullshit, you can't, they got to be a little bit more hesitant in the shit that they back from Republicans. And that is the chilling effect of that fucking case, right? No, you didn't get all the way to the fucking end there, but that's the chilling effect. The Steve Doocy's like, do we really want to defame all of Biden's family and say that they are all corrupt and stuff like that? Look, you can just talk shit on the president all you want. That's your job. Mm-hmm. Right? Fox News, that is your, that is like the number one thing you guys do. But his family isn't, they're not political operatives. Mm-hmm. They are just regular people. So you can do that. You can do that bullshit if you want, but don't dig too hard, because if you do, they could sue your ass and then you're right back in the same situation. So correct. Now that was, you could see the wheels turning in this, like the slow, like Viewmaster type image of $787 million. They don't want that smoke anymore. Nope. They don't want it. And look, maybe they'll get back to like calling shit out and trying to like manufacture stuff, but it's too fresh right now. Mm-hmm. They just lost a bunch of their big people over this shit. They lost almost $800 million. They're not in the business of running hardcore into the next conspiracy theory. No way.
Nope. So that's what I thought about as well. Yeah, it's like,
Steve Doocy's like, funny how that works. Pump the brakes. We don't need another big lie. Fuck that. He's like, I'm not losing my job. You know how much little I have to understand to be on a morning show? This is the best gig ever. Nah, he's not gonna fucking fuck that up. Let's talk about the Proud Boys. Yeah, they're not so proud anymore, are they? Proud Boys get hit. Four of them get hit with convictions on sedition in key January 6th case. That's just too bad. So the four people, I don't remember the names of the other three, but Enrique Terrio is one of them. And he obviously was the leader of the Proud Boys, and he wasn't even there on January 6th, but he was caught coordinating with the Oath Keepers and everything else over secret, you know, that server, friends of Stone and all this other bullshit. Mm-hmm. I think it was on Telegram. So yeah, they hit his ass with sedition charges. Look, when people keep saying Merrick Garland doesn't do anything, I need people to stop saying that. Like, you need to stop saying that. Like, the law does not move quickly, but this guy is fucking putting people away. Should he put more January 6th people away? I personally think so. I still stand by the idea that all of these guys were accomplices in the beating of a cop, like the severe beating of a cop, and he died. If you are the getaway driver in a bank robbery and someone gets shot in the bank, you get busted for prison, like for that, for murder.
For it felony should be murder, the same, so.
Felony murder, right? Why was not every single person who broke into the fucking Capitol charged with felony murder? I don't know. Well, I do know. They were white and conservative. That's why. Again, there are adults in the room and there are children in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Because if those were BLM protesters who did something like that, you can guarantee they would have gotten fucking nailed for it. And look, rightfully so. That's what the law says. Look, I think this is great.
I can't wait for sentencing. Also, like, apparently, the sentencing recommendation came through for the government, in the Stuart Rhodes case. He's already been convicted. They are recommending 25 years in prison for him. So we'll see what we'll see what the judge says about that. I like very it. Exciting.
Yeah. No, Stuart Rhodes should die in prison. Period. Goodbye. Like, oh, I'm going to take over and you know, work for Trump. Cool. Yeah, you work for Trump. Writing love letters, my man. Scratch him on a wall.
We'll hey, maybe goodbye. Maybe he can be your cellmate one day. You never know.
I like that. I like that idea. Yep. I mean, in fairness, I think in the in an episode of Black and Black Cinema recently, I suggested he be thrown off of a boat off the coast of Madagascar to figure out whether Mako sharks are really useful animals. But, you know, that's just me. Or jail. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mako sharks or jail. I don't really care. Either one for Trump is fine. but, yeah, look, I think this is great. I'm glad to see the Proud Boys are actually serving or finally, you know, getting some much due attention from the federal prison system. The fifth defendant in the case, Dominic Pizzola, was found not guilty of sedition charges, although he was convicted of other serious felonies. He's the guy with the shield breaking the window. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Yep.
So,
see ya.
Long overdue.
Yeah, apparently they didn't convict him of sedition because he was not part of like the Proud Boys leadership, so they said.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't care. Go to jail.
Go to jail.
Yeah. As long as you're gone, I don't give a shit. Now, mm-hmm. This Week in Stupid, Brad. I have not read the story. You're bringing this one to me.
I did. So again, Tommy Tuberville. I told you he'd make a reappearance in the show. Went on a radio interview, and they were talking to him about the Biden administration's efforts to expand diversity in the military, and his argument that they're weakening the force and hampering recruitment. Though I will say that Tommy Tuberville is the lead guy that's preventing key appointees in the military from being able to be putting the positions. So who's really harming who's really harming the American military? And in a quote from he said, quote, "We're losing the military so fast, our readiness in terms of recruitment. And why? I'll tell you why. Because the Democrats are attacking our military, saying we need to get out the white extremists, the white nationalists, people that don't believe in our agenda." And so the reporter asked him the question that the person interviewing him asked him was, "Do you think that white nationalists should be in the military?" And his quote was, "Well, they call them that. I call them Americans."
How was that your response?
Now his office, his office. Immediately sensing that this was disastrous, rushed to try to clarify what he said. And he was saying, no, he wasn't saying that white nationalists should be a part of the military. He's saying that Democrats call all conservatives in the military white nationalists. That's what Tommy Tuberville was getting at. And so there was another interview that a local Alabama outlet did with him as well, where they basically asked him to clarify what he said. And he was basically like, Democrats call all of us white nationalists. And the reporter's like, no, like, that's not what they do. And he's like, yeah, that's not what a white nationalist is. And he's like, oh, yes, it is. He's like, I don't agree with that classification. And they're like, no, like, a white nationalist is like a person with like Nazi beliefs, like that, like they believe in like the advancement of the white, or the advancement of the white race. And Tuberville's like, huh? Like, it is.
That's somehow a worse response. You don't know what a white nationalist is,
right?
You're an adult man. Like, you're an adult,
an old adult man. But I mean, this is the byproduct.
Dude, he can't be.
This is the byproduct of the Fox Newsification of the conservative brain, because people like Tucker Carlson have taken the term white nationalist and are trying to like almost rebrand it as a slur against conservative white men.
Right. Like, no, dude, you can be a conservative white man.
Yeah.
And be fine. I don't care about that.
As we said on the show many times before, words mean things.
They do. They in fact have meaning. Like,
yeah.
You can't then just go, well, you're just saying I'm a white nationalist. No, we call white conservative men and women, by the way, there are white conservative women who are white nationalists as well. We call them white nationalists, not when they're just like, hey, man, I think we should have a conversation about the debt ceiling. That's not what we're talking about. But when you say things like, hey, I don't know, man, maybe we should have an ethno state that only caters to white people, or that why are we teaching black history or Latin history or, you know, gay history or trans history? We only need to be teaching white Christian history, and I'm a Christian nationalist. Those are the people we're talking about. And if you don't know the difference, Senator, you shouldn't be in office. That's insane.
Well, one could argue that Tommy Tuberville definitely should not be in office for a host of different
reasons. Again, I we have said this many times on this program over the years. The barrier of entry to become a Republican politician is so incredibly low. Or to become
I can't
talking head. It is so incredibly low.
Yes. Ridiculous. Again, if people are not familiar with Tommy Tuberville's qualifications to be a senator, is that he was real good at coaching Auburn football team for a real long time. And I guess that made him worthy to be elected to Congress to represent the state of Alabama.
Oh, my God. Dude was like, huh? What's a white nationalist? You are, Tommy. You are. You dumb fuck. Jesus Christ.
At least he didn't double down and be like, I'm a white nationalist. You know what I mean? Like, that's me.
Give it a week. Give it a week.
Again, Alabama had, they had Doug Jones, man. Like, they had a dude, like, mad. Like, I know he's a Democrat, but, like, tons of respect. Former federal prosecutor. Like, Yeah, like, well, you know, not a moron. Knows what he's fucking talking about. And they're just like, you know how we got to get that guy out of here and get in this football coach.
Who was the guy they had who ran against?
Roy Moore.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
right. Child molesting Roy Moore.
A guy who was banned from the local mall.
Yes.
Cool. So it's like, no, we can't put Roy Moore in. That would be ridiculous. How about the football coach? Yeah, sure. At least he doesn't fuck kids. That's cool. Great. Like that's his only qualification. Like, I haven't tried to fuck any kids, and I ain't no Democrat. They're like, in.
Tommy Tuberville, but again, idiots. But again, he loves sexual assault. Like he said, wants to vote for Donald Trump twice. He's so excited that he sexually assaulted a woman.
Wow. Real bad, guys. Real bad.
Yep.
Republicans, I don't know what you're doing.
Not sending us their best, the state of Alabama.
They are not.
To put it mildly.
No, they are not. JTD, do better. all right. That is it for us. These are his people. A lot of people don't know that. He's a huge Tommy Tupper fan. That's fucked up. I wouldn't even say it. That's fucked up. He loves that guy. He loves him. All right, that's it for us. We will be back next week for another episode.
See ya.